to Ruby Rider's Pegging Paradise podcast number 105 on June 12th, 2015. Changing the world one ass at a time. So, class announcements. Here are my upcoming classes. On June 28th, Sunday, I will be teaching in Austin, Texas at Forbidden Fruit, and you will get 2 hours of education about pegging for $20, the low, low price of $20, which really is quite nice compared to California prices. You guys in Austin, you're getting a deal, man. And then on July 12th, I will be back in Ventura at Tristology. And there are 2 classes, beginning and advanced. Each one is an hour and a half apiece. You can pay $25 for one, either one, or you can get both for $40. So those classes are upcoming, and I'm going to add another one in Long Beach pretty soon, probably later in July, and go from there. So that's the class stuff. So let me tell you about what my idea is for this podcast. I recently received a letter that I read on podcast 103 that created quite a stir. And what I mean by quite a stir is that I got a lot of responses when I read it and wondered about it. So let me just read it one more time for you guys. My boyfriend and I both lost our anal virginity to each other. I loved, and she writes this all in caps, I loved doing it to him. I mean, I almost got off just from the strap-on rubbing where it should. We had some of the best, hottest sex that night, and she capitalized hottest. Okay. He's terrified our friends will find out because he doesn't want to be called gay. How sad is that? This was a great pleasure for us both, and trust me, he's far from being confused. Try it, friends, you won't be disappointed. So I read that on podcast 103 and responded to it, and I put out the call to you listeners. So help me find a reply to the pegging subject coming up and a guy getting accused of being gay. And I've already talked about how much I hate that word accused, getting told that he's gay if he likes pegging. And let's find a great response to that. And you guys rallied. And so on podcast we're not in the 200s yet. And on podcast 104, I read the one where the guy told me what the code was and the reason why this young man is so afraid of being called gay. Ruby, what the boyfriend who doesn't want to be called gay means is he doesn't want to be called unmanly. Gay in this case doesn't really mean homosexual, but is guy talk for unmanly. He doesn't want to be called it because it's hard to respond that you aren't unmanly after it is exposed, you get penetrated. It is almost the literal definition of unmanly, as it is typically and historically the woman who is penetrated. It's a silver bullet put down that when used against you, even jokingly when accurate, is like a punch in the chest because you can't refute it. So again, while the word used is gay, it's just code for unmanly and isn't meant to be homophobic. So that's where we left off on podcast number 104. Now y'all have got the history behind what started this podcast theme. And what I want to talk about today is shame, because I got a bunch of different responses and I wanted to read them to you. But what's pervasive throughout all of this really appears to be shame, sexual shame. And it's a huge subject. So the first thing I'm going to do is read you another response that I got. As for responses you can use to the are you gay thing that are quick or to the point without trying to elevate the conversation. How about it's not Liberace gay, it's Viking gay. It'll usually at least get a laugh and nobody would say Vikings are unmanly. Not sure of a good serious response other than whatever, it feels good. Worst case, you just say, I lost a bet. As someone who enjoys being pegged but only one or two people know about it, both are women, I don't look forward to my guy friends finding out, as I've always been the essential guy's guy, good at sports, with women, etc. If they did find out, it would lead to endless teasing, and rightfully so. It's just how guys are wired. Being able to stand up to it and joke or fire back is key. Again, it's just how most guys communicate. As long as you can stand up for yourself and not show embarrassment about it, no one cares or thinks less of you. You might even cause a few interesting conversations between them and their wives later on. So I really like that idea about as long as you stand up for yourself and not show embarrassment, kind of as long as you embrace it. And then no one will think less of you or really make a big deal of it. I love that idea, even though I recognize that it's probably really a difficult thing to do in the guy's world. I have one more response that is very much along these lines that I'd like to read you. Hey, I'm following your podcast about the guy who didn't want his friends to find out that he likes pegging. Unmanly is an understatement. Where I've seen pegging used by guys in conversation has more to do with the guy turning in his man card altogether. It is the equivalent of a guy abdicating his male power. And for doing that, he is to be permanently shamed and ridiculed by his male peers. So in my experience, telling a guy he might as well be pegged means he's being a pussy, parentheses, or a better word choice, of the highest order. It's about as high a male insult you can levy by attacking the most iconic male function, which is fucking by penetration. It's much more insulting than saying the woman carries the man's balls in her purse. And I would add that it's far worse than actually being gay and being penetrated by another man. Straight men are more tolerant of gay men than a straight guy who abdicates his maleness by this criterion. Okay, so I'm learning more about the guy code, about how guys communicate. I still really do wish that guys would just say unmanly instead of gay. Gay pisses me off, but I've waxed poetic about that. And I'm starting to get a little more why this is such a big deal. Now, long ago, my great friend, Paul, in Denver, told me when we sat down one time and said, go ahead and pick my brain and ask me anything you want about pegging. And I asked him, what was the thing that stopped most men from doing? What was the biggest concern? What was the biggest fear? And he said, of being outed, of anybody else finding out, of having a great relationship and loving and married and happy and whatever. But what happens if it breaks up? Is she going to tell everybody that you like getting fucked up the ass? And I didn't realize it was that big of a thing. And so now, together with Paul's information and this stuff, I'm getting the bigger picture. I mean, I knew that the guy's world had some secrets that I wasn't understanding. But this really helps in terms of taking a look at the whole situation. So now I want to read you a story that a man wrote in, and it's fairly long, but it's an amazing story. And it ties right into this. So before I really go off and talk about a bunch of things about these things that I just read, let me read you this one. I've known since I was a boy that I enjoyed anal stimulation, but I inherently felt it was taboo, dare I say, homosexual, for a man to enjoy such stimulation by the time I finished puberty. A few years later in college, I got involved with the techno house music scene and was exposed to substances that increased sensitivity and ever so effectively tossed most inhibitions out the window. And in this state, not long after the first time I'd been exposed to these substances, I left the party early and took myself to the local adult store and promptly and irrationally spent $300 on a variety of adult toys and erotica. That night, which went on until 10 a.m. the next day, was extremely enjoyable. But upon coming down and sleeping, I awoke with a deep, soul-crushing shame that I'd somehow crossed out of the straight world and into the in-between or possibly homosexual world, and in response, I threw away all the toys so no one would find them. Now, I want to mention here in this guy's letter, he wrote deep soul crushing, all in caps, so this is a huge thing. Okay, to continue. I had an exceptionally healthy sex life with many wonderful women, but it was pretty tame in the grand scheme of things. I essentially buried this desire and didn't touch myself that way again until the next time I was exposed to said substances, where I again went to the adult store and dropped a bunch of money I didn't have, and spent a blissful night of self-play, only to be greeted by the familiar shame and subsequent disposal of the day-old toys. After 3 or 4 of these sessions, I began to think I was deviant, and crawled further into my head, as I was only willing to enjoy this while under the influence. Anyway, this went on for 20 years, at least, of periodic partying, and then my disappearing from my alone time. In that time, I married my girlfriend of 5 years, and our sex life was pretty much average, but she never had any clue that I enjoyed this, and I know, all in caps, how she would have responded had I worked up the courage to ask her, so I just didn't. During our relationship, these, quote, private sessions, end quote, became extremely rare, and I reached a point where I had sworn off substances like those I'd done for so long, and then she met someone she liked better and bolted. It didn't take long, more as a respite from the emotional pain than anything else, for me to find myself under the influence and heading to the toy store at 1 a.m. Just for the reader's information, these private times occurred between 1 to 2 times a month, then twice a year during my relationship and marriage, and then went back to once a month as I was getting older and didn't want to damage my body any more than I already had over the years. But that desire remained, so I continued it over the next 5 years, during which I met my now wife, who is sexually open. But I'd accumulated so much shame that I couldn't bring myself to tell her, except one time and very indirectly, to which she gave a clumsy and painful 10-second attempt, to which I imagine she'd checked the box that she tried it, and it just didn't do anything for her, nor me, and that was that. Well, by this point, I'd thrown away literally thousands of dollars worth of toys for fear of being discovered, but despite the shame, I'd still get this impulse to have an alone night with stimulants and toys that I couldn't shake until I had completed this ritual, for lack of a better word. After one such night, I went well into the next morning, pretty much sober, still enjoying the stimulation, which I wrote off as being still under the influence. But I held on to the one toy I must have bought 6 different times for a couple of days, where I'd use it while sober, and the pleasure was every bit, or almost every bit, as enjoyable as it had been under the influence. As such, I started feeling less and less inner shame, as I figured this was my body, and what I do with it is my business. But it would never, all in caps, be communicated to my wife and lover for fear of rejection, or worse, she would think I was into men. Over our first year of marriage, I got to where I enjoyed anal stimulation so much that it was hurting our sex life, because it was just me with my one well-hidden toy that only came out when I was sure I had time and could not get caught. And then, all in caps again, oh, the shame I imagined would be soul-destroying and might even hurt my marriage. Over time, I became more comfortable making subtle hints that I enjoyed the stimulation for, quote, health reasons, end quote. Something she didn't seem to disapprove of, though she never asked me what that meant, so I read that as a stop sign. After about 3 months of this and several failed attempts to broach the topic directly with her in unequivocal terms, I was staring out the window trying to work up the courage with her sitting right next to me. She knew something was weighing heavily on me, and she asked, to which I said, "It's nothing." Which in my head I was chastising myself for not taking that opening to discuss my desires. After sitting there literally terrified of her response, I asked her if she would have any issues with using a toy to stimulate my prostate during our lovemaking sessions. I squinted my eyes in case she was looking at me with a total look of disgust and embarrassment, but when I finally looked directly at her, she was much to my surprise, smiling, and her verbal response was even better than I could have written myself. She said, "I know you mentioned it before, and I tried, but it didn't seem to be going well. But I am absolutely into pleasuring you this way," and in fact, she took my hand and slipped it down her panties so I could feel her wetness and excitement at the idea. She asked if I wanted to try it right then, But I was a little caught off guard and now nervous as to what that would entail, especially considering I'd never had anyone there to participate. I said, "No, probably not tonight." She said, "Fine, it's settled. We'll do it tomorrow. And I'm going to get all up in your business." I love that part of this letter. What an incredibly awesome response. Okay, to continue. Tomorrow arrived, and with much trepidation, we showered, and she asked me to turn on 50 Shades of Grey, which I knew was more or less bondage, softcore porn, though I'd never seen it. But I know she likes to be restrained from time to time. About halfway through the movie, we started playing touchy-feely, and she abruptly got up and pulled me by the hand to the bedroom, where we started making love, and she stopped me and said, "I told you today was the day. Where's the lube?" What followed was the most terrifying, releasing, mind-blowing stimulation from her fingers, and only because I wasn't able to relax for the first 20 minutes as the balance of my shame was leaching out of me with each finger stroke. She led me to the shower where she came up from behind me and gently pushed my shoulders down, and she inserted her fingers aggressively inside me. It was so much that I had to ask her to stop because my legs were shaking too much, and we went back to bed. She was a trooper, and for 30 minutes she gave it every effort, refusing to quit when it looked like I wasn't going to orgasm, likely because I was so nervous, and she worked me into the most explosive orgasm I can ever remember having. As she got up to go wash her hands, she had this devious smile on her face, and where her vagina had been positioned was now a 14-inch circle of her wetness on the bed because of the excitement she had derived from offering me that pleasure. She enjoyed it, and it was only the first time this last weekend, and if her feedback about it is any indicator, it won't be anywhere near the last. All of this to say, Ruby's reassurances are dead on, and you should ask for what you want, as what's the worst that could happen, at least in a committed marriage? The way she put it to me in my post-orgasmic bliss probably says it best. She asked me if there was anything she wanted me to do to her, what would my answer be? To which I responded unequivocally, that I would do almost anything and love it as long as it was monogamous. To which she asked, "Why would you think that I'd feel any different about your satisfaction?" I love this woman on an entirely new level, and while still a little gun-shy, I'm confident that over time we'll work out the years of built-up shame I've accumulated, and we will both enjoy new levels of sexual satisfaction for the rest of our lives. I would venture to say that everyone has boundaries that they wouldn't get into, so the approach is important depending on how out there your fantasy is. But if I could create a lover and wife out of everything I wanted in a partner and lover, it would be someone that believes, as she and I do, that there's very little we won't do for the other sexually or in life because we're both fueled by the other's excitement. It's turned on a light in me that I thought was gone. And I think, just maybe, this turned one on for her as well. Thank you to all the men who wrote in here. Especially thank you to the gentleman who wrote this last piece. You shared some very, very personal things so eloquently and so openly that I'm really, really appreciative, as I'm sure my listeners are. Wow, what a story. What an amazing, amazing story. Sexual shame is such a powerful, powerful thing. So if I go back to that original post that started all this with the young man with his partner, and they took each other's anal virginity, and it was hot, 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 right? And then he said, "No, I don't want to do this because I'm afraid my friends will call me gay." Okay, here's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of the story that I have told many times on this podcast, and it is about the young man who loved pegging with his girlfriend. A few of their friends knew, but not very many, until the day that they were at a wedding reception and all their friends were sitting around a big table, and his girlfriend had a little too much to drink and announced the fact that he loved pegging so much to the entire table. There was a little nervous laughter, but the young man was so pleased to report that every single one of the men at that table contacted him individually, independently, by themselves, and asked him, okay, talk to me about this. What's the deal with this? And it's probably because she waxed poetic about how much pleasure he got out of it. So they were going after the pleasure. But in this situation, what it sounds like that young man did was own it. And so then let's move up to one of the guys that wrote in that talked about, you know, if you can own it and not have it shake you and be confident about it, that's what makes the difference. Well, again, I'm sure that's much harder to do than just to say those words. I wonder what it would be like if you got accused of being unmanly in whatever stupid way they managed to say it, and you said, look, if you don't, and I mentioned this on the last podcast, or I perhaps mentioned it as a, yeah, I think I mentioned it on podcast 104, it doesn't matter. And if you were to say, look, if you don't know anything about prostate pleasure, you're missing some of the most intense sexual pleasure that your body is capable of having. And I kind of feel sorry for you, dude. So, I don't know, is that escalating it? Maybe that last part is a little much, but you see my point? It's like, wow, this is the most intense pleasure I've ever felt. And so if you're ever curious about how this works, I can certainly let you know. And just totally go off from the I'm manly, you know, sort of response that is probably really automatic. But the whole sexual shame thing also really got me thinking about the Brené Brown TED Talks. Because one of the things that Brené Brown talks about regarding shame, and there's a whole TED Talk about it, and of course I'm going to link to both of her talks. One is about vulnerability and the other is about shame on my Linkorama. But what happens with men in our society is the one cardinal rule is do not ever, ever, ever be perceived as weak. Now, there is a misconception that vulnerable is weak, but I'm sure mixed in there in terms of talking about the overlap of the Brené Brown talk and her points with pegging, vulnerability is obviously there for pegging. So being in the receptive mode, being in the non-running the fuck mode, opening up, being vulnerable, and experiencing intense, sometimes mind-blowing pleasure, like body orgasms, full-body orgasms, can be seen as absolutely being weak. And that goes against the cardinal rule, which is do not be perceived as weak. Because it's not just do not be perceived as weak, freaking, you know, the guys freaking out about that. It's that women do not want to perceive their guys as weak either. And I have absolutely gotten letters from women who, when they start pegging their guy, this explains why sometimes guys say, you know, is she going to look at me differently? And why women even write in and say, I might look at him differently after I do this. I'm kind of fearful about it. This is the crossroads, I think, that we are coming to and that we are sort of reaching a bit of a battle here or a bit of a conflict at least, is that, yes, vulnerability is required with pegging. And sometimes the guy is completely out of control. Now, is that perceived as weak? And does that freak women out? Sometimes it can. And that's a sad, sad thing because allowing yourself to open up is really something that requires a tremendous amount of strength. There is no better example than this last thing that I read that this guy wrote in. You can hear in that letter how much strength this is taking, how much he is having to work to get through that shame and allow himself to open up, be vulnerable, and first to talk with his wife about it, which was awesome. But even now, there's so much residual instinctive stuff there. It's taking an enormous amount of effort and strength on his part to work through that. So, yeah, there's a crossroads. There is a conflict where these things meet. And this is giving me a much better idea, much better picture as to why this territory is difficult territory for so many men. And why it is also difficult for the women who are with them. Now, one of the most important things for the women with them to get is that men are human beings. There will be times when they are not completely strong, and you have to accept that. I believe, I'm not going to quote this exactly right, perhaps, but one of the things Brené Brown said is that a man came up to her and said, "How come you're not writing about men?" She said, "Well, I don't write about men, I write about women." And he said, "Well, how convenient." He said, "Look, you know, my daughters and my wife expect me to always be the guy riding around on the white horse. And they would rather see me die on that white horse than fall off of it." I may not have quoted that correctly, but I've come close, and you get the whole concept. Women, some women, would rather see a guy completely and totally fail than show that he has vulnerability and a moment of weakness. Whereas women, shoot, we're given a fucking carte blanche to be weak all the time, and the guys are supposed to put their emotions aside and take care of us. Read a book a long time ago. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before as well. It's called The Men We Never Knew. Now, a little gem that I took out of there was that men have been trained by society to give women carte blanche with emotions, and when women are upset, men are taught, trained by society, expected, fully expected, to put their emotions aside and take care of the woman or hold space for her because she is the one that's all emotionally upset, right? Women are never trained nor expected to do the same. And we wonder why guys have caves. Holy fucking shit. Jesus, if you can't be there for your partner, if you can't depend on your partner being there for you in a moment of weakness, who cares what that weakness is about, right? Is this some fucking fairy tale world that people want to live in where it's like, I've got my knight in shining armor. He's never, ever, ever going to be weak. He's never going to need anything. He's all here to take care of me and my emotions. And if I'm having a tough time, I fully expect him to drop everything he's doing and take care of me. Where's the reciprocity? Where is it? Why doesn't he get that same privilege? Why doesn't it work both ways? Men should be able to expect a level of emotional support from women, from their partners, their wives, their girlfriends? Absolutely. Why is it seen as unmanly? Is it sort of like asking for directions, you know, asking for help, asking for directions? I mean, I know that emotions are foreign territory for a lot of men. I remember hearing a comedian talk about, you know, women, they just have all these words for emotions. There's so many words that they have to describe their emotions. Men have no idea. Men, first, they have to get on their donkey and ride all the way up to the top of the mountain and all the way back down the other side to the valley on the other side of the mountain and find their emotions, right? And then on the long trip back, they have to come all the way back up the mountain and all the way back down the other side, and they have to figure out what the fuck they are. I heard this echoed a long time ago in a story a friend of mine told me about talking with her husband and saying, you know, you don't tell me how you feel. Why aren't you telling me how you feel? And he said, you know, look, you're lucky I even recognize I have emotions, and I'm trying to figure out what they are, but I don't really know. So this is the foreign territory of emotions, okay? So if expressing emotions is seen as weak, or if expressing doubt or needing help or needing support in a tough moment is seen as weak, then we're totally fucking ourselves here, ladies, right? I mean, I don't get this. I really don't. And it frustrates the hell out of me because I would like for nothing more than the whole stigma of unmanliness through anal penetration to be able to be wrapped up in a beautiful little package and thrown out the fucking window, right? It's just not fair. I mean, I recorded that audio clip for you guys at Thanksgiving called Reassurance for the Ass Men. I wrote a piece some time back, and I read it aloud, made an audio clip out of it, and posted it up. I also really enjoy getting the letters from men saying, thank you so much, because you treat this as a normal thing, and you're matter of fact about it, and you're informational, and I felt like I was a freak, and then I came to your website, and I'm not, and it's really okay. So, yeah, they felt like a freak, like the guy who wrote that last letter in. My God, that's so powerful and awful, and what a horrible thing to have, like a deep, hard rock inside yourself. And I'm so glad, sir, that your wife is the woman that she is. She got all up in your business. And I'm sure, since you have written this letter, she's gotten all up in your business a time or two more. So, belatedly, at this juncture in the podcast, I am going to play you the music, sir, because clearly, more than it's ever been true before for you, this is now pegging celebration time. So let me now read you one more short letter that I got. Finding women who are accepting of guys who want to do this, let alone actually want to do this with me, is proving to be a bit difficult. Us dudes letting our macho guard down is not attractive to many ladies, apparently. I've been hooking up with this extremely sexy young lady lately, but she finds pegging to be a turnoff. I'll keep trying, though. So at this point, I do want to mention that I, of course, understand that not all people like this, that some people are totally turned off by the whole, it's where the poop comes out, and it's a hard limit for them, and that's totally fine, and I respect that. If you don't, however, have that hard limit response and absolutely know it's totally not for you, I really would encourage you to give it a try if your guy has come to you and said, hey, you know, this is something I think I would enjoy. Because it's not just the openness, the vulnerability, the being able to let down all of the in-control stuff that is such a relief and a pleasure and an amazing experience for the men. It's healthy, too. Remember we talked about that. Some guy wrote in a while ago and talked about, are there health benefits from this? Are there health benefits from prostate massage? You bet. You bet there are. So you can approach it from that manner too. So, okay, let's figure out a plan of attack. It's not a plan of attack for the sake of your ass. Because really, hey, we're changing the world one ass at a time here, right? You guys are going to help me do it because your asses are involved here too. And you women listening, thank God for you women who are listening because you are the ones that need to also talk up to any girlfriends who bring it up and say, oh my God, Joe said he wanted to la la la. Yeah, talk this up. Tell them how much you love this and all the reasons why. Okay, so one of the things that Brené Brown says, and I want to give her such props. Oh my God, if you haven't watched these two videos, you really, really need to. So what feeds shame, and we can hear this loud and clear in this last letter that this man wrote, the long one, what feeds shame is secrecy, silence, and judgment. Now, the secrecy and the silence can absolutely be self-imposed, but interestingly enough, so can the judgment. This man, with his last and present marriage, thought for sure that she would reject him, or certainly had a lot of fear of it, and that paralyzed him for such a long time until he finally communicated to her what he wanted. So it was a fear of her judgment. It wasn't just a judgment coming from himself, because in his story, you could hear how he had kind of worked through it. It's sort of like, hey, this is my body, and if it feels good, that's awesome. But the fear of judgment is huge, and the fear of rejection. So yeah, that's what feeds shame, is secrecy, silence, and judgment. So one of the things that she talks about being an antidote to shame is empathy, okay? So the wife is there knowing that something's weighing heavy on his mind, and she pulls the string and talks to him about it and pretty much kind of takes the reins and says, okay, we're going to do this. Being able to relate in any manner or express empathy and compassion for your partner if they're going through any of this is huge for them being able to let go of this self-imposed and kind of as a result of societal imposed shame. We're such a fucking sex-shaming society. It's so sad. And man, I'm going to do the best I can till the day I die to try and reverse that. You know, here I am just talking about all kinds of things I wouldn't have dreamed of talking about 10 years ago. Not only out loud, but I'm talking on a podcast with like who knows how many people are listening, right? So yeah, things change. And I want to be an agent of that change because there is so much pleasure to be had here. There is so much deeper intimacy. You can hear that at the end of that man's long letter as well. How much he is seeing his wife in a completely different way and loving her in a completely different way because they managed to connect in this manner. So when shame happens, it really eliminates your ability to completely be vulnerable because it's this paralyzing thing. You know, inherent in shame is a fear of worthiness and a struggle for that worthiness. But as Brené Brown says, vulnerability is the birthplace of creativity, belonging, love, and joy. Again, let's look at this man's letter. It is the birthplace of creativity, okay? He and his wife are getting to do some really fun, creative new things because he was willing to be vulnerable and tell her what he wanted. Belonging. You can hear that just radiating through this letter at the end of how much closer he feels to her now. Love and joy. Well, those are obvious in that letter. So, yes, vulnerability is totally inhibited by the shame felt because of the act itself, the shame. Wow. So I think the best plan of attack for the asses here is a two-pronged approach, much like a double-ended dildo. I think one is to be confident and own it whenever you can. The other is to talk up the health aspects of it. So being confident and owning it. Think about that young man. Think about him owning it and saying, well, yeah, I totally like it. And think about the woman that he was with waxing poetic about how much pleasure he gets out of it to the point that those young men at the table came to him individually and said, dude, talk to me about this. Maybe, just maybe, you can say something along the lines of, oh, yeah, you didn't know about that? That's just like a guy's G-spot, man. I have orgasms like 10 times stronger than I've ever had them before because I do that. You want to know more about it? You know, openness, confidence, embracing it, emphasizing the intense pleasure. My loads are bigger. I shoot further. Yeah, absolutely. That might do the trick. Now, okay, I don't live in a guy's world. I don't know how intense it can be. And because I've read some letters before from guys. One, I think, was in, I don't think he said, but I think he was probably some sort of law enforcement or something along those lines and wrote in and said how difficult it was for him because of the world he ran around in every day and existed in and worked in to be able to embrace that side of himself that totally loved that. Yeah, I have another friend like that. Total macho guy and had a very hard time admitting to himself how much he enjoyed it and letting go of his fear of being judged to the point where he would ask his partner for it. So yeah, but the pleasure aspect, big part of it, to be combined with confidence, okay? So that's the first of the double-pronged approach. The other would be talking about prostate health. Let's see, something along the lines of, hey, prostate massage is really healthy for you, okay? It's the best thing you can do for your prostate. And swollen prostate, when you get older, is like epidemic in this country. So not only does it feel incredibly good, but it's healthy for you. And so if that's not enough for you, dude, and you keep wanting to put it in a box, well, you're missing out. Oh, well. How's that? I wish I had the magic wand to make it not be that really, really intense silver bullet, awful insult described by the other two guys that wrote in. Because that just pains my heart. That just, oh, you got, no wonder that study was done showing that straight men are more stressed out than out gay men and out bisexual men because they spend so much of their time trying not to appear gay. And, you know, I've seen this before, too. Well, now I know it's not trying not to appear gay. It's trying not to appear unmanly. But Jesus Christ, you guys, wear the fucking pink shirts. Eat the quiche. Go to the musicals. Do whatever the hell you want and be sexually whoever you are and own it. That's what I want. That's the world I want. And I have said before, and I also say in my classes, that the blowback from this for men is a lot more intense than the blowback for women. If you hear that Susie down the block or whoever is into putting on a strap-on and fucking her husband, they're not going to think that Susie really is that big of a deal. They're not going to focus the attention, the shame, the judgment on Susie. It's going to be focused on John, her husband, right? You get my point? The blowback is much more intense for the men than it is the women, which is why I can sail through all this. I can talk about it like it's normal. You know, I get looked askance at, absolutely, when people hear what I do sometimes. And I certainly miss out on a lot of dates from guys that want nothing to fucking do with that. But that's okay, because we're all different. And if everybody wanted the same thing, it'd be a really, really boring world. I'm okay with missing out on the guys that are not into anal pleasure. Because I need one that loves it. That totally loves it. What else can I tell you guys and you women who are listening? When I read this man's letter, it, together with the other things that I have come across recently and all the responses to that one letter that I read, really kind of all came together and made me get, on a deeper level than I have before, how intense this can be to overcome, how intense it can be to be judged by your peers in a way that does feel like a silver bullet or a punch in the chest and that there's no way that you can refute it. So at this point, I'm going to quote Charlie Glickman, who is the author of, he's the co-author with Aislinn Amirzian of Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure. And he has encountered many times, of course, having written the book on this, the shame and the discomfort from both sides of the equation, from the men and their partners. And one of the things that he said in an interview is, okay, if you as a man think that it somehow makes you subordinate or less of a man or somehow inferior to get penetrated, which really was inherent or at least intimated in those couple of letters that talked about how intense that judgment can be in calling a guy gay or unmanly, which is what I really prefer, then what you really need to do is to turn around and take a good long look at how you view women. Because if you think that it makes someone inferior to be penetrated, women are penetrated in the sexual act all the time. So what is your opinion really of women? Deep down, do you think they're inferior? Because if you don't, then why would you believe that? And that's kind of getting deeper into the psychological part of it, but I sure saw his point, and it was intriguing that he had gone down the rabbit hole and pulled that out to show people. That was awesome. And you know what? I think at this point I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to correct myself, because as much as I wanted it to be a two-prong approach, like a double-ended dildo, it actually is three, now that I've talked it out, recorded this podcast and thought about it. It is three things: confidence, pleasure, and health. And if those three can be combined in whatever way makes you comfortable, whatever way makes it feel comfortable for you to own it, then gentlemen, please do. Please do. Because the more you act like it's normal, the more people are going to treat you like it's normal. And if people judge and walk away, what a lovely sorting process service that your ass has just done for you. Oh my. But please, let's keep this conversation going if you have any other things to contribute. Even stories, like the guys that wrote in about their opinions about what that all meant, the guy code, or if you have a story to tell about overcoming your own shame, or if you just want to write in and tell me how it feels. I welcome all input, all of your letters, or if you want to call in, 800, excuse me, not 800, I do not have an 800 number, 805-500-6544. So any of those would be fine. Love to hear from the guys. And I'm going to put a call out also to the women out there. I want to know what it felt like to think that your husband was potentially weak because of this act. Did you go through that? Did you have fear about it? How did it affect things? Did it resolve itself? Tell me the story if you struggled with that. Even if you just had fear about it and it never happened. I've gotten letters like that too. I thought it would change things, but it didn't. He's still the great, lovely, manly man that I always knew. Not unmanly. Manly. Yes, indeed. So all you manly men out there who have the most courage of all, the courage to explore your asses, I'm going to put that reassurance for the ass men link to the audio at the end of my Linkorama as well. Please do, everybody, watch those two TED videos. They're just 20 minutes apiece. Won't take too much of your time. Ah, and last but not least, I wanted to let you guys know that there is an article that I wrote posted on Tantus's website under the sex ed area, and they inspired me to write an article called The Truth About Strapless Strap-Ons. So I'm going to put the link to that as well in my Linkorama, because you have all heard me rage about the truth about strapless strap-ons because they're not fucking strapless. And I finally put it all down in an article, posted it there. They're going to have it up on their blog exclusively for 60 days, and then I'm going to post it as far and as wide as I can throw it around so that everybody understands that we are now going to call them doubles. They are not strapless strap-ons. Came out today, and I put it up on Facebook, and it's going kind of crazy. Everybody's sharing it and saying, yeah, it didn't work for me either. So there you have it. It was a very satisfying day for me. And also to get all of this stuff about shame out, too. This is good stuff, really need to be said. So I'm going to leave it there for today. You can follow me on Twitter at @Ruby_writer. I've got a Facebook page that you can do the thumbs up on and like it. You can subscribe to my blog and get all kinds of way cool postings and pictures. For example, I just did quite a humorous post about going to Texas because I researched the 6-dildo law. Because I heard that there was a law that said you couldn't have any more than 6 dildos. It's quite entertaining. I encourage you to go take a look at it. My podcast is available on iTunes and also on a wide variety of podcast downloaders. You can send your questions and stories to me at ruby@peggingparadise.com. Or you can click the Write to Ruby links at the upper right of every page on my blog. Thank you so much for downloading and listening and being a part of all this. Thank you for contributing. Thank you for sharing. And we're all going to figure this out together. I swear, you guys. We're going to stick with it and keep doing the stuff we love until we get it all figured out. Happy pegging.
Do you fantasize about having a sexier, more satisfying life? Entice Me is devoted to teaching men and women about positive, pleasure-focused approaches to sexuality. Whether you're spicing it up in the bedroom with your partner, planning a private retreat, or looking to just feel sexier, Entice Me will help fulfill your desires. Entice Me works with your needs to make positive changes in your life in and out of the bedroom. Entizme offers an award-winning luxury line of ultra-fashionable, sophisticated haute toys and pleasure objects, which are of the highest quality. With in-home education, demonstrations, and discreet shopping, you'll have the time of your life spicing up your sex life. So what are you waiting for? Visit enticeme.com for more information about our products and services, or simply call 714-386-9684. That's 714-386-9684. Enticeme, making it a sexier world.